I have never seen a ghost ever. I probably never will. But that doesn't mean I don't think there's something to the ghost and paranormal activity.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. In this episode, we have Samuel Allen, a restaurateur and owner of Boobies. That's right, folks, Boobies Brewery. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes.
Glad to be here.
All right, Boobies Brewery. What the name, okay? Boobies Brewery. It rolls off the tongue. But honestly, before you and I spoke, I considered saying Bubbies, Boobies. What is the history and what's going on there?
It's a real name. The name is Bubi. It's spelled B-U-B-E. It's a German name, and a lot of German names end in E, and when they do, you pronounce the E. So it's very confusing for most people in English to say it right. Mr. Bubi has a lot of descendants. They don't have the name anymore because they're descendants through one of his five daughters. But they say Bubi, so it is their family name, and they get to pick how they say it. And we honor Mr. Bubi and his family by saying it the way the family says it. But he would have said his own name, Alois Buba.
Buba.
Alois Buba. His Alois is his first name and Bubi is his last name, but okay. He would pronounce those two words, Alois Buba. So I like to compare it to other German E-ending names that people know, because you're in Germany, you would say the E. Porsche makes cars, Bose makes speakers. You say those E's in German. And another one they don't realize they know is Hersche. H-E-R-S-C-H-E is the old German spelling Hersche. For the name, Hersche, but the family changed it, dropped a C and added a Y. Now it's Hershey.
Really?
So, yeah, that's a very similar German name. So I like to say Hersche became Hershey, like Buba became Bubi.
That's interesting.
Hershey's a little less noticeable in the unusual way.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So what was it like growing up for you?
I grew up in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, not far from where we're sitting. Pretty... I must say, just an all-American classic childhood. Mom and dad, I had two sisters, and, a circle of friends that I developed through school that I'm still in touch with. Is, most people have a buddy or two or, a couple of good friends. It's like a dozen of us.
Oh,
and
wow.
We're still all close. Yeah, we go out to breakfast once in a while. Different ones make it when they can. The ones that are far away, I really value that because we're a real good check and balance with each other. They all grew up to be successful. People, it was all guys in this case. We had girls that were friends too, but our tight little group was all boys. And, we weren't all the same. We played different sports and different interests and stuff like that. But a real enriching experience for me to get that many close friends and all that any given individual brings to a relationship in terms of learning. I learned a lot from all of them. And so that was very, very, very valuable for me as a child. But boy, E-Town was a great, the parents, you get on your bike and, say, I'll be back later, no cell phone to track you down, and you came back later when you said, they didn't worry about anything. Rode summertime, riding bicycle to the pool and riding through the countryside and spent a lot of time just doing that sort of thing. So yeah, I must say, I feel bad if kids are growing up these days and they're bedrooms with their cell phones, because that's not nearly as enriching as the weather. We were outside all the time.
Yeah.
Rain,
snow.
Yeah,
out
sure.
The sun.
And we did stuff outside in the snow, and sure, actually summer and winter were our favorite seasons because you'd either be out in the snow or out swimming.
There you go. Yeah.
Although we liked Halloween too.
Having those 12, those 12 friends that you're all close with, and I feel like nowadays you're right. People, you might have one or two, like you said, but they're not so close. And I wonder if it's because you're not spending as much time with them when you're younger, playing and going to like the local swimming hole and things like that.
Sure. And we did all of that, played, it was fun. And we partied together when we got old enough to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was, Very enriching to have that many in my youth, to have a lot of close friends. It's just a neat experience. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but in retrospect, I realized, well, not everybody else, you know, it's easy. Your own point of view, the only way to be objective about it is when you can step outside and look back and say, no, not everybody gets to do that. So anyway, it was a wonderful, and E-Town was a great place to grow up, just an absolute middle of the road, small town, you know, no city stuff, but you weren't out in the middle of nowhere. Small towns were great. You could go anywhere. And again, you didn't worry. I don't think we locked our doors or anything, you know, in those days.
Anyway, nowadays, no.
To worry a little bit more maybe, but
yeah. You know, after high school and such, was it college, or what was your motive? What was your plan for after high school?
I grew up presuming that college was just a foregone conclusion, and I never had a problem with that. My parents maybe expected me to, but I didn't mind a bit, because as a side business, my grandfather started selling Christmas trees off the family land, you know, before I was born. And every dime that I made helping to sell Christmas trees went into a bank account to save up for college. The only time I ever took a dime out of that bank account is secretly once I got a ticket when I was 16 or something.
What?
It was probably like $40 or something.
Yeah.
They were cheap in those days.
Yeah.
This is the 70s I'm talking about.
Okay.
And I saved that up and I went to Penn State presumed that, and loved education. But I went the whole way through college and graduated without a single idea of what I was going to do with my life.
Really?
Not even a clue. You know, I worked at State College. I worked at an interesting restaurant, so that was a good experience. But I had no interest and no plan at all to get into restaurants. Yeah, I studied business, so that was good because I learned some of the basic foundation stuff you need to know for any business.
Yeah.
I studied psychology, which I was and still am very interested in, and I studied theater because in high school, when I was a class president, there weren't enough guys in the show. So I thought, well, one way to set a good example is I'll go ahead and try out for the play we were doing in junior year. And boy, I'm still doing theater. That's why I brought this hat along.
Okay. Yeah. Is it a Bowman style?
That's
hat?
A bowler.
Bowler?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bowler.
Right.
Okay.
It's the one I wear most commonly, but we do theatrical things at Booby's Brewery. Partly because when I got there, I was just looking for ways to expand the business. And, I learned to love the theater from my youth. It's always been a side thing for me, but it's part of my business.
Yeah.
One of the things we did was to create shows at Booby's Brewery. So, we do. We have about 20 different shows we do. And I don't play every one, but I have a part in every one when I'm available or when I can.
Oh, wow.
And, it's one of the little funky things I do that's most business owners aren't in a show at their restaurant. But
no, yeah, that's pretty creative. Yeah.
I get to do, I don't want to just do all paperwork.
Right.
You know,
yeah, what fun is that?
Exactly.
Yeah, what life is that?
You're a photographer. You want to take pictures. You don't want to do all just business stuff.
Right,
you
know, right.
Well, to me, that's what the theater aspect has been.
Okay.
I get to, and even all these shows we do, they're live shows. We interact with the customers when they're there. And I'm getting off the subject a little bit, but we develop each of these shows continuously. So each show, even though it's got some scripted, you know, lines, it's improv as well, and it's ever evolving. So that's very fun in a creative way. We're always tweaking it and adding it and get something
new.
It is a unique experience, you know. Yeah. And the customers help us develop the show because we make some of them what we call guest characters in the show. Many of the shows are called murder mysteries, so it's a mystery going on, and you as the customer don't know exactly who did it, but you know, you have clues.
Yeah, okay. All
and,
right.
Wow. And then the other shows, those are in the old Victorian Hotel at Booby's, and then down in the catacombs we do shows called Feasts, which are a whole different thing. Our current one this past month of October 2024, when we're recording this, is a dinner with the Count, which is you are guests of Count and Countess Dracula in their deep underground dining chambers, four stories underground, and you're a guest at their party.
Yeah.
They're celebrating the dark season. So we just finished our run of that.
That's awesome.
Two nights ago.
Okay.
On Halloween.
Yeah, on Halloween. Okay, wow. So
anyway,
how did you, I mean, you had no aspirations to
Get in the restaurant
business, but yet here you are owning what one of the top historic, I would say.
It's certainly one of the most unique.
Yeah.
Because what makes Boobies special, and you know, hopefully everybody has something special going on, but in this case, what makes Boobies special is there used to be hundreds of small breweries back in the 1800s before refrigeration, and you could, you know, make beer in massive quantities and ship it all over the country. They delivered all their beer by horse and wagon. It's before electricity. I mean, and it was a decent-sized brewery for a small town like Mount Joy because it shipped its beer to nearby towns. Some of it might have made it here to Lebanon. But in those days... there were hundreds of little breweries because there were no big breweries. They're like a local bakery or local dairy. They were local, woven into the community kind of business. Mm-hmm. They were small. This is the only one left in the United States in its original condition from back then.
Wow.
There were thousands of these little breweries, and the 20th century was not kind on mid 19th century breweries, meaning they either expanded and became big like the other German breweries, which would be Pabst and Mueller, better name as Miller.
Yeah.
The original Coors used to be spelled K-U-H-R, you know, S, but it's now Americanized. Mm-hmm. Budweiser, Pabst, and all the rest. They made it and are big, but the other 99.9% of them are pretty much gone without a trace. In Lebanon, you do have here some buildings of the old Lebanon Brewing Company, Lebanon Valley Brewing Company, it might have been, I think. And I believe some folks are brewing beer over there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, on the north side of town.
That is an old brewery from the period. Now, it was used for many things since. So, I mean, we still have the vats, we have the underground cellars, we have, you know, the equipment, we have horse tack, we have barrels, you know, bottles.
You brought a glass one with you, yeah.
I brought one along.
Wow.
But that's what makes the place unique. So that's what got me into it. So I graduated from Penn State, as I may have said, with no idea what I wanted to do in life. Yeah. I had a degree in business, BS, a BA in psychology. I had enough credits for a BFA in theater, but the Penn State said, you either got to become a graduate student or you got to get out of here.
Okay. Yeah.
So with my 181 credits, I said, okay, I'll graduate.
Yeah.
And I stayed in State College because I didn't know what to do.
Beautiful up there too. Yeah. Very beautiful.
Very much enjoyed the area. You know, explored. I'm an explorer, so I know that area as well as I know this area because I spent a lot of time, you know, poking around in my free time.
Yeah.
But sold life insurance, which was a good education, part of my education, because I hated the idea of being an insurance salesman because I just didn't enjoy.
Doesn't seem like you,
Sam. No, yeah. but I learned a lot from it. It was only like 6 months, but
learning experience.
It allowed me to stay there. Oh, I went through all the training, very valuable, and as important as anything else I learned in college was my time, you know, in the training of how to sell insurance. So I do value that very much. But one weekend while I was living at State College, I happened to come home to visit my parents. My father was retired from the Defense Department and selling real estate with my uncle's real estate company. And just I happened to pop home, and he said, come along with me on this. You know, he knew I didn't know what I was exactly going to do, so he, you know, had me come along. And I did get a real estate, took the real estate course and got the real estate license, just as a matter of fact. I wasn't all that interested in doing that. But I came along on a real estate showing of a listing that was there, and it just happened to be this interesting old place in Mount Joy, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And after being at State College, which anybody familiar with it knows, they have a bunch of bars. The kind of coolest, oldest, hippest ones are all like underground. And that was on purpose because they weren't allowed to be above ground when State College first allowed. State College used to be dry from the 1850s to the 1950s.
Wow, okay.
When they first allowed bars in State College, they had to be below ground level. Huh. But that made them all kind of like underground.
Yeah.
And they were all fun, but packed all the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, look at this place. I mean, it's way bigger than any of them. What I didn't think too much about at the time is it didn't exactly have 30,000 people of drinking age within walking distance.
Yeah, yeah.
That does make a difference. Mm-hmm. Location's key. But I thought there's got to be a way. So the two guys that were, my father and I, you know, me just tagging along, basically, we're showing Boobies Brewery too. We're kind of overwhelmed. They're like, And I was fascinated. I was like, I could not get it out of my mind. There must be some way. You know, I'm 21 at the time. My family were not have any interest in backing me up at a restaurant because, you know, their insurance and real estate kind of banking direction. That's kind of the opposite of restaurants and entertainment and risky. You never know.
I was thinking that in my head. A little more risky, right? Restaurant compared to finance and the such.
It's kind of like two ends of the scale.
Yeah.
But they did. My father and some of my family members, my one uncle particularly, helped me get into it in spite of their reservations because they knew they could just see that I really wanted to do it. And the former owner, he was part of a coalition of wealthy guys that saved the place back in the 1960s from the wrecking ball and decided when Lancaster County tourism was just kind of really getting underway, these couple guys from the area decided to buy Booby's Brewery from basically nothing and fix it up and show it to tourists. That was their concept.
Okay.
Well, bless them because they saved the place, but they never made a single dime in the place. They, you know, it was a money pit. Mm-hmm. They might have gotten it for an inexpensive price, but they put millions into it and never saw anything back. And they, after 14 years of doing that, they were getting kind of tired of it and wanted to sell it. That's why it was for sale. And I came along fascinated, and they left money in it to help me as well. I mean, I paid them for the first 10 years I was there. And so I blessed them too for, you know, helping me get off the ground. I had a bunch of partners at the time. One particular partner was with me up until just 7 years ago. But, you know, they gradually, the people that helped get it started were paid off and moved on. And it, and I must say, even after, let's see, 1981 is when I first saw it. 1980 is when that tour of it happened. 1981, I came to work there, and I took over in 1982, so that's a good while back.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm 42 years in now, and I've still not lost my appreciation of walking in and saying, I want to share this with people who would enjoy an historic place, if they like beer or breweries or caves or underground or paranormal stuff or ghosts or, you know, the list is very long of things that you might be interested in that would draw you to come see the place. Which it's is not just architecture.
Yeah, it's not just a meal. You know, this is a
experience. It's an experience, sure. Yeah. Of course, we got to pay for it somehow, but I don't want to charge you to walk in the door. I want you to come in and, you know, if you just want to get a beer, that's fine. And you can see the whole place. Or come, you know, get a ticket, come to one of the shows, come to dinner in the Catacombs restaurant, you know, come to our outdoor beer garden when the weather's nice and get a burger and a, you know, beer or something, or get a nice dinner and a bottle of wine, you know.
There you go.
I want all that to be available, but that's how we pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly.
And we
yeah.
brew beer. You know,
there you go.
We brew.
Yeah.
So we didn't, the first 20 years I was there, we did not brew because it was just Booby's Brewery. But no, they weren't brewing when I got there. The microbrewery thing hadn't even taken off yet. There was almost no such thing as a microbrewery when I started. But yeah, during the time I've been in business, it started catching on. Well, it was only a year before I got there that they allowed, there's a law that was signed into law by Jimmy Carter, federal laws that goes back to Prohibition, that you're not allowed to brew beer, but they changed it in 1979 and changed the law that you were allowed to homebrew.
Okay.
And they said you're allowed to make up to 200 gallons a year, which is a lot of beer. You don't, nobody should drink that much, certainly.
Yeah.
But that got people into, it's like, hey, it's legal to homebrew. So people back in the end of the 70s and mostly early 80s started to get into it. And boy, that's kind of the seed that got the whole thing started, because once the handful of people that got into homebrewing that really enjoyed it, like the bug bit them, you know, they wanted to do this. Well, now they want to open a brewery and get into brewing business.
Yeah, they got the itch.
Yeah, they just wanted to scratch that. So the microbreweries started opening up, and, you know, the whole landscape of brewing has changed, all because of changing one law back in those days. And it's because people were not allowed to homebrew before that. So you didn't have the amateurs getting into it and loving it. And but now you do. And boy, I think we were down to, it might have been about 8 breweries in all of Pennsylvania in 1980, Yingling being one, and Iron City and Schmitz in Philadelphia was still there, but there were only a handful. Mm-hmm. Now there's, we have three breweries in Mount Joy.
Yeah. Little Mount Joy, right? Yeah.
We have three in one town. Uh-huh. And I don't even know how many. It'd take a while to figure it out because you have to. There are hundreds of breweries in Pennsylvania. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of breweries in Pennsylvania now.
Right.
You know, Philadelphia has a bunch. But out in the countryside, it's kind of nice because, you know, the rent's a little cheaper to mm-hmm. run a building than in. It's kind of funny. Plus, you got to get rid of your. You have to take the grain that you use and you have to get it to a farm. Well, our case, that's really easy.
Yeah, that's not hard at all, right?
But yeah, in New York, you have to take it out of New York and take it to a farmer, and it gets eaten by livestock.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of funky little.
Did not know aspect. That. Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. In the old days, a brewery like ours raised their own pigs, and they just every day fed the leftover grain from the brewing process to. Yeah, they actually have. There's a pigsty in the beer garden. It's still there.
Wow.
And they raised pigs there.
I had no idea. That was
Yeah, I could go on all day with those kind of fun little facts. But yeah, I had so many interesting. Yeah, but that was a normal thing at a brewery back in the 1800s to raise pigs. Right at the brewery.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. No. No.
Back to.
Back to. Yeah. Let's take a sip break real quick.
Sure.
We'll take a sip break. Yeah. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. When people walk in to Booby's Brewery, what can they expect? You know, tell us about the catacombs. What can they see? Talk a little bit more in depth about like that whole atmosphere.
So walking in the door.
Yeah.
I very much like myself and my staff to be very cognizant of what that experience is like to just walk in the door, because it's not like walking in any other place you've been. So it's a very important moment. And the old saying, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, is very true, because you walk in, I want a friendly person to greet you, and you're not paying anything to get in, which, you know, it's a museum, but it's not that kind of museum. You don't have to pay to get in. If you just want to come in and look around, take a few pictures, I want you to feel welcome doing that. If you want to see the catacombs, even though it's a restaurant, if you don't mind waiting briefly, you can go along with us on a little tour, because if you eat in the catacombs, you get a tour. But you or anybody else that happens to walk in the door is welcome to get that tour, so you can see the catacombs.
Yes.
Now, right as you come in, there's a pub that's visible to the right. It's the original bottling works of the brewery. And then the outdoor beer garden's right adjacent to that. And people just come in, and we let them do it every day. People come in, and we say, sure, take a look around, just watch your step. But it's an old building with lots of levels and things. But I very much want you to feel welcome to come in, to just show your friend this cool place you found, or come in because you're going to get married there next year.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and all points in between. If you want just a quick bite and a beer from the brewery, that's fun. If you want a special occasion, it's your anniversary, and you want to sit down and have a nice dinner and have it be romantic, we'll take you underground. It's all lit by lanterns and, you know, dimly lit, you know, kind of romantic kind of look. That's the catacombs.
Okay.
Or you can come to the murder mystery dinner up in the old Victorian hotel and have a lot of fun. They are specifically meant to be entertaining and fun and humorous. And we also have lodging. So the part of Booby's Brewery was a hotel back in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s when Mr. Booby and his wife, Mrs. Booby, were there. And they lodged then, and we didn't do that for a long time either, but we rehabilitated the lodging area of the building, and then we even took over across the street. There's an associated property, and we have lodging across the street from Booby's too. Yeah, and there's even an underground tunnel that connects that property.
Are you serious?
We don't have it open yet, but we know where it is, and we like to dig it out.
Yeah.
But it's there's the Booby's Brewery is at the location it is because, there are natural caves. The whole town of Mount Joy is riddled with natural caverns underneath it, but most of them are inaccessible. People back in the 1800s often considered a cave to be a nuisance. If you have a cave on your property, it's always a boy, some young kid's going to get in there and break his leg or something. So they often blasted them shut. So there were several good entrances in Mount Joy 100, 150 years ago, but they're all closed off. But Booby's Brewery is some of those caves. The brewery is at the location because they to get the caverns, the underground cellars that they needed to lager the beer, it was made a lot of sense to find a natural cave and then adapt it into what's there now. They dug it out, blasted it out bigger, evened up the shape of the space, and then lined it with stone. So what the catacombs at Booby's Brewery really are hollowed out, stone-lined natural caverns.
Yeah.
So that's what they are, and that's why it's there. But some of those caves go even further down from below the catacombs and then under the street, and that's where this tunnel is. It connects the place to the house.
Have you been down?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it doesn't go very far because they used it as a dump for 100 years. They dumped their garbage down there.
Oh, no.
So they filled it.
Yeah.
And it's all mostly dirt now because, you know, whatever rots away. But there's anything metal or glass doesn't rot. So we have excavated down there. And the stuff we found so far is only from the 1950s and 60s. We found utensils, shards of glass and things. But we can tell by what we found that it's not that old, you know. Well, it's getting old, 70 years ago now. But Booby's, you know, the access to that space has been there for 150 years before that. So we think if we keep digging, we'll find older and older stuff.
More history.
Hopefully. Yeah, we have a whole bucket filled with the artifacts we've found so far. So, it's a real mystery at Booby's is how, it's a bit of work. You know, you have to get down there and dig, and we use 5-gallon buckets and carry it up by hand. You know, we don't want to get some major vacuuming because we want to see what's in it.
Yeah,
you know, you never know what you might find.
Right, you can't rush it and yeah.
Well, and they threw their, well, in the old days, you didn't have garbage service. You know, people use their outhouses, they dump their town dumps down at the river. They just dumped their garbage in the river in the old days.
Wow.
So there was not organized garbage service like we have. So a place like ours, they had this lower cave. They just used it as, that was where the garbage went. They filled it up. They completely filled it over, over 100 years. That's probably not hard to do. But we want to dig it back out. And it's a real,
that's cool,
interesting mystery at our place. What's going on? And we don't even know. I mean, a wonderful hope would be if it connected directly into some of the other caves. But you know, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, they didn't care about that in those days. To us, it's fascinating because the caves are rare now. You know, and the ones that are really good are commercial, and you pay to get in.
Yeah.
But in the old days, there's a lot of caves, and you know, but. And everybody knew where a cave was around here somewhere.
Yeah.
But most of them are closed off.
It's that sense, of adventure, right? Like, what's down there? You don't know. You know, where does it go? Where does
how
it lead
big
to?
Is it? Which, how far does it go? You know,
right.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and I'm, there's still enough of a kid in me. I liked that when I first got there. Now you might wonder, well, why didn't we have dug down there on numerous occasions, but we've got a lot more to do, and we certainly have other things that are a little more pressing than digging in the cave. But we want to get back to it. Hopefully this winter we'll get back on that again.
There you go.
In the dead of winter, it's a good project.
There could be anything down there from, you know, anything, bullet casings, or you never know. Like,
sure.
And then it just adds to the history, Civil War stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, anything,
belt buckles, anything metal that would last.
Stuff that would last.
Yeah.
And once you get no oxygen, you've got, because you buried it deep enough, it pretty much, you know, stays that way. You know, all the actual, you know, garbage and paper is long gone. But, and they probably threw dirt down there too. But yeah, I want to find out more about what's going on, you know, in my watch. I want to know a lot more about it.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get to see how far this, we know what the tunnel is, but again, it's filled in too, but this tunnel goes out under the street and we know at the Booby's side, but the other side of the street, we don't know where it ends, but if we dig from this end, we might find it.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
Fun. You know, that's really cool. And I wanted to, you mentioned in the hotel part, having the different, they're different rooms. Are they themed rooms or how does that work?
Yes. Their rooms were very plain. A hotel in 1879, when this one was built, and it was very modern for its day because it had a bathroom. Older hotels had no bathrooms. You know, they had outhouses and chamber pot under the bed, and maybe a washstand with a bowl and pitcher. You know, washstand meant that's where you washed your face because you were given a pitcher of water at an old hotel and a big bowl to.
That's all you had.
No running water or sewage. Just, you know, it was that's the way they all were. But the boobies put in a bathroom and had a flush toilet. That was like a big deal in 1879. Yeah. We believe it's the first flush toilet in Mount Joy. But there was one bathroom for a floor of 10 rooms. And the rooms in a hotel room in those days was like the size of a decent sized closet today. I mean, it had a bed, a dresser, a window, done. You know, no air conditioning, no nothing. Had a radiator. Sorry, they did have heat.
A little heat.
And, yeah, it had heat.
It was freezing in the winter.
Dead of winter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so when we went to renovate, and they were in very poor condition when I got there. They, you know, the plaster's cracked and the ceilings are coming down and all that sort of thing. So we decided that since they're small anyway, let's make each one interesting, just fun. You know, it's a plain little white room. They had an iron bed and a dresser. I mean, it was nothing. Yeah. There was nothing exciting about it at all. And it was very small. So we started coming up with themes. And now each room has a theme. You know, one is the Desert Southwest theme. One is the New Orleans Bourbon Street room. You know, one is the Jungle room. One is the Good Princess room with the, you know, looks like a fairy princess would want to be. And ironically, that's where a lot of the brides get dressed when on a wedding day. That's their day to be a princess, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. So each of them is meant to be. The whole rest of the place is so fun and interesting. We didn't want the rooms to be like
bland.
Just totally bland. They're not.
Yeah.
They're very colorful and very cool. Very entertaining.
And people can get like a one night or a weekend or whatever they need.
Yeah. Whatever they want. We rent them for all different reasons. Sometimes a business guy will rent them for the night, but it's mostly weekends and people that want to, you know, come have fun. And sometimes a group of people will come. They usually have a blast because they're all staying over and they can go to the feast or the murder mystery and sing karaoke afterward and then, you know, go up to bed and stay over and get up and get coffee together in the morning kind of thing. You know, it's a fun little escape.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So what is it like owning your own business, owning your own restaurant?
Well, since I started doing it, since I was so young, I mean, I was literally, you know, 22 when I took over. I don't know anything else, but I often say this, I'm not sure I can recommend getting in your own business to your average person because there's so many hurdles that you must learn how to jump. You'll learn a lot. But I don't want to say that I don't recommend it really in a general sense. I want to say I recommend it to those who don't mind working 80 hours a week for a couple decades. if you're okay with that, then of course I recommend it.
Go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you don't mind thinking outside the box constantly. I learned when I was studying insurance, actually, they give you all these little self-help things to, you know, get you going. And some of it I really did value. And one thing I'll always remember is I was taught that successful people do things that unsuccessful people are unwilling to do. And I took that to heart. And I've done lots of things I didn't feel like doing or get up when I really didn't have enough sleep or didn't really want to do, but I did it anyway. And if you're okay with all of that, go ahead and get in business.
Yeah.
But if you're not, I don't really recommend it because you're not going to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you'd rather just work 40-hour weeks and show up and let somebody else worry about all the weird things that can go wrong in a business, then don't get in your own business because you're gonna constantly have to. I'm still learning things that I don't know all that much about. I'm always asking questions because I want to know the best. And when can I fix it myself? When do I need a professional to come fix it? Because a professional to come fix it means you're not going to make a lot of money that week.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You're going to spend it all doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And on and on. So, you have to have a real ambition to not. And unfortunately, I remember looking myself in the mirror several times in the first couple of years going, is this really what you want to do?
Yeah.
And I look around this fantastic, amazing place and go, yes, it really, really is.
Yeah.
And I just pull up my bootstraps and get going. Even we have hundreds of steps there. And I used to get so tired of going up and down 3, 4, 5 flights of steps constantly. And one day I said, well, I don't have time to go to the gym. So why don't I just look at this like my exercise program? And I have never complained about it once since.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have that self-improvement kind of attitude.
Two sides again, of every
coin. If you have all of that on your plate, then go ahead and get in business. But if you don't, I don't think you're going to be happy if you don't, you know, really feel committed to, you know, rolling up your sleeves and being willing to do almost anything it takes to stay in business. Some businesses might be a little simpler, but boy, the restaurant business especially is, because then you got to learn marketing and how to, you know, what if you have a slow year, you know, and you asked me earlier, you know, are there bumps in the road? Well, for the biggest bumps in the road over the years have primarily been when everyone's, well, COVID obviously was a pretty good time. Sized bump.
Yes, for everybody.
But it wasn't the only one. I remember my first shock was, you know, this is before you were born, the first Persian Gulf War was like 1990-ish, and the public doesn't go out and have fun when they're worried about something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, for 4 months, from January to April, I think it was 1990, things were so slow. I'm like, how are we going to pay our bills? And it was because of that.
Yeah.
It's nothing wrong with anything else, but people were just so distracted. There's a national mood when something emergency kind of thing happens. You know, this past summer was a little bit like that. It was not just hot, but you know, it was the elections were in everybody, and you know, the Olympics were going on, and you have to, things like that can affect you directly.
Yeah.
Because people are, I mean, some people come, but what if not enough come? Mm-hmm. You gotta. Oh, the other thing, if you're in business, is just because you have $100 in your hand, don't spend $100. Keep one, and the other 99 better go back into business.
Okay, right.
So,
yeah.
And if you don't, you're not okay with that, because people aren't good with handling money. They have no business being in business, because I've just always presumed that business is first all over and over and over and over again. And if there's some money left, I'll spend it. And if there isn't, I'll just live like I did back when I was in college, which is, I could do that on very little.
Yeah.
And I'm still okay with that if that would happen, because, you know, I'm going to keep the farm going. You know, the animals eat first. I learned that when I was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and a lot of times too, I think a business is, you almost have to treat it like a person, right? Mm-hmm. Like Booby's Brewery.
It's an entity.
It's a living entity almost, if you want to look at it like that, correct. Or like Color Tech. And like you said, they have to come first, you know, because without... Mm-hmm. That there's no job, there's no employees, mm-hmm. there's no clientele, customers coming in the door. So I get what you're saying.
Hopefully have some good stretches, you know. Mm-hmm. And during those good stretches, you better put a couple bucks back.
Yeah.
Because you'll need them when you have a bad stretch.
For a rainy day.
For sure. And anybody that's in business should or better know that. And now if it's just never enough business, well, then you have to, you know.
Reevaluate.
Maybe, yeah. But if you know there can be enough, then it's up to, you know,
get after it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just stay on top of it. If there's a will, there's a way, kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, that's been a very different life than just working for somebody else. And I got to admit, I knew when I was interviewing, I could have gotten the oil business was absolutely roaring back when I back when I was graduating, and they were just looking for young, you know, management people. And I signed up for a couple of interviews, and never even went, because I knew, if the boss was a real jerk, I wasn't going to do well.
Right.
I just knew that. So, if you have a good boss, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I would have kept looking until I found a good one, I'm sure, because if the boss is just a big egomaniac or something, I just knew I wouldn't thrive.
Right.
So, but then I got my own business, and I got to be
the boss.
I'm the boss, I try to not to very hard. One of the things I studied in college was organizational behavior and group decision making. You know, you, I, and three other people have to decide, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
There's a problem, we got to solve it. You know, well, the dynamic going back and forth. If you're just pushing your way no matter what and aren't willing to listen to reason, well, that's not the way you do it.
Right.
You got to really be objective, step back. You know, and then even when you make a decision, think, is there anything else we're missing? And there's a whole mechanism about it. And I'm very interested in that. It's the psychology of business, basically. And I think some of that education helped me, too, just because I'm interested in it anyway. I like knowing how people's minds work and mm-hmm. what they're thinking and why they decided and what influenced them to decide. A lot of that going on right now with an election, but won't get into that. Let's keep going.
Yeah, no, exactly. And there's a saying, right, you never want to be the smartest person in the room, because then you only know what you know, right? But if you hire other people that know different things or excel, mm-hmm. whether it's marketing or sales or restaurant, you know, owning a restaurant, you can learn from them and grow.
You'd want to be a good coordinator of all that.
Yeah.
I was very inspired in my education by reading about John Kennedy. He had a cabinet, and these, like you said, they're all mm-hmm. experts in defense and economy, you know, finance, whatever, the guys in his cabinet. And he would leave the room and let them all talk about what they think they should do. And they'd come back and see what they had to say. He made the final decision, but he was really naturally good at that.
Yeah.
And that's just real key to be able to get. And we studied business that went out of business. And of course, the people were feeding the boss's ego, telling him stuff he wanted to hear. It's almost a classic example of just telling the boss what he wants to hear. And then, you know, the ship is sinking and no one wants to tell him.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, he's going to get mad. So, well, then later the ship sinks, and it would have been nice if somebody could have said something in time to fix it. But that happens all the time, and it's a poor group decision-making going on there. And, you know, that's probably one of the primary business reasons businesses go out of business is one of the main things, is because not that they didn't have a market, not that they didn't have, you know good product or whatever, but because the decision-making process was very poor, and a couple bad decisions can put you out of business real quick.
Oh, yeah.
So I've tried to, you know, all along the way, just step back and learn and, you know.
Yeah, take it all in, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, we studied businesses and went out of business. That's a good lesson.
Okay.
What happened?
Yeah. Where'd it go wrong?
What are the mechanics of them, you know? And usually what happens is the boss is a jerk or the head guy thinks he's so special.
Yeah.
And you start losing your good people. The good people, because they can work anywhere. So right. Once your good people fly, then now you're down to just the ones that are left that are kiss your butt and you know, and now you're really heading downhill.
Yeah.
So I find all that stuff very interesting. It's you know.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. And being 22, you know, when you got into the restaurant business, up until now, you know, people as they tend to get older, they lose their creativity, right? They don't have an outlet or something to do. So how have you been able to scratch, you know, your itch of being creative, going back to your days in the theater? Yeah.
That's very important to me, because I think about that. I can't help but notice, you know, musicians, you know, they all write their famous songs that everybody knows. They're in their 20s, maybe 30s, but then it kind of stops.
Yeah.
Because
what happens?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, it's some of what, you know, environment. And music might be again, I can't analyze that one fully, but I did not want to let that happen. What you need is an input. Now, I've been blessed with so much available input of things that can be creative. I'm constantly, and that's the reward, you know, 90% work and 90% blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
But that don't take away that little 10%.
Right.
That is the fun, creative, interesting, developmental, you know, when I get up in the morning, it makes me want to get out of bed and go do it thing.
Right.
And my business has always had a good share of that, because, you know, we do anything. A lot of businesses don't have that, but anywhere they do, there's always some room for creativity. But in ours, it's just boundless amounts of things to try with food and menus, the creative way to handle a project, you know. And then we do theater and murder mysteries. We have an art gallery for artists. We have a venue for live music. We, you know.
So much, just, yeah.
And all of that is got potential for development, you know, constantly, you know. Mm-hmm. This past summer, we did something with dogs, you know. We don't have restaurants and dogs, and you know, much to work with. We have an outdoor beer garden. Health department changed the law allowing dogs to be in an outdoor area. So we started Wagon Wednesday.
Wagon Wednesday. I love that. That's great. Okay. And you bring your dogs?
We're going to bring it back next spring.
Yeah.
Bring your dog. You can kibitz with other dog people and get a beer. Yeah.
There you go.
We didn't develop very far yet, but we're, you know, that's still in the pipeline.
I love it. That's great. That's great.
That's an example.
Yeah. And one of the things you do too, you know, to be creative, you know, Boobies is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like haunts or hunts for ghosts or things like that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. And talk about that.
I get a lot of questions about that from people that come through, and I often give the tour after the murder mystery, and that's probably one of the primary things people ask about, because they're still deciding what they think about, you know, spirits or ghosts or that kind of thing. I have never seen a ghost, ever. I probably never will. But that doesn't mean I don't think there's something to the ghost and paranormal activity program. I think old hotels are very likely to be haunted because of the amount of human activity that's happened in them. And our place has become a destination for people who do investigating. So to honor that and you know, satisfy the public interest, we have a ghost tour generally the first and third Friday of every month. Of course, you got to do it at 10 o'clock at night when it's dark. Two in the afternoon just doesn't make a ghost tour. You know, it's got to be dark. So we do it at 10 at night. It's not too late. And it lasts a little over an hour. And one of our actors, two of our actors actually, both do it, but one of them will lead the tour at a given time and describe what we know about the ghosts, the hauntings, what we've learned, the family. You know, we're well versed in the people who lived there, and you know, one of Mr. Booby's granddaughters seems to be still there with us because dozens of people have seen her.
Really?
I haven't, and I probably never will, but what I've learned is some people see ghosts and some people don't. Mm-hmm. And if you saw a ghost when you were a young child, you probably have a very good chance you'll grow up to still see them because you've developed a sensitivity to their presence that if you grow up, start cognating, processing thought, and you're 5, 6, 7 years old and never saw a ghost, there's just a really good chance you just never will. And I accept that. But when 30 people see the same thing, and I got to say that there's, I can't really argue with...
Something's going on.
There's that much smoke. There's got to be a little tiny bit of fire.
Right, right.
So I think there's something to it. I think ghosts are just sort of residual energy of the people that were there. The people are long gone. Mm-hmm. And then places like Gettysburg, people come from... It's a world destination for ghost hunters. Oh, ghost hunters, we have a paranormal crew called Jotniks Paranormal. They are... they're an official paranormal research group, and they come at least once, sometimes twice a month, and do a paranormal investigation, but you're welcome to join them and learn. You can sign up to learn to be a ghost hunter.
No way,
so we've actually added that to their repertoire a couple of years ago where, you know, you can, a ghost tour, but you come in and they have the equipment and they teach you.
Oh, wow.
You know, and they're investigating themselves in the meanwhile, so they've learned a lot of, you know, they know Boobies very well. Our place is particularly well suited for paranormal research because if you buy an old house and you get some sense there's something, or you might have them come in, but you really want them coming every Saturday from 10 to 2 in the morning to your house?
No, probably not. Yeah, no.
Whereas they come every Saturday from 10 to 2 with us, that's fine. We're there anyway.
Yeah.
And they probably want to be in the part that's, they're not in the bar.
Right, you're right. They're not having a drink. Yeah,
They're not
dark.
In the pub.
Yeah.
They're in the old hotel, which is,
the most activity? Is that where...
Sure, and I think that makes sense because that's where the most human activity is. And there's some scent, they pick up some of the things that they're researching, they pick up some evidence in other parts of the building, but it definitely focused on the hotel, and that's where most, you know, ghosts aren't going to be in. If you build a brand new house, unless there was an Indian burial ground underneath it, you're probably not going to have too many.
Shouldn't be, ghosts.
But it does have to do with age, and an old house just has had more people, or in our case, hotels.
Definitely.
You know, exponentially more people coming and going than, you know, a house would.
Right.
Because every weekend it's full of guests in the old days, and we have the register. Yeah, it's kind of fun. Our old hotel register has a guy that signed in about once a month named John Doe from Reading, Pennsylvania. His name wasn't John Doe. He was just writing that. We think he was a mobster that was bringing booze over because Reading was a good central place for booze distribution when it was illegal. And we think, because we know that they served booze, alcohol illegally at Boobies. During Prohibition. They weren't making beer anymore. But we know they were serving illegal liquor.
Yeah.
Beer didn't do real well during Prohibition just because it's too much volume and too little alcohol.
Mm.
It wasn't easy to sneak it around.
Yeah.
Hard liquor, a lot more alcohol, a lot less space.
Gets you going,
And if you want a weaker drink, you made a mixed drink. And a lot of the mixed drinks that people have heard of from the old days got started during Prohibition because that was a way of, you sneak the alcohol, but then you know, mix it down with tonic or orange juice or whatever. You know, and make a cocktail. Anyway, but all of that plays into our place because apparently the ghosts are worried about this same room that the guy always stayed in that was from Reading because they're nervous. And I guess that makes sense if it's true that he was a gangster, that some of the residual, like the housekeeper, might worry about
what's going on in that room.
That guy's dangerous. Yeah. He's obviously, you know.
Wow.
So you can extrapolate a little bit of information just from that. But, you know, none of this stuff can be solidly proven, probably, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I will say ghost research has gone a long way. They've got so much. When you get volumes of information, after a while, you can start drawing some conclusions. And my conclusion, one important, was if you grow to be 95 years old, you had a good life, and you die in your sleep, you're probably not going to leave much of a ghost behind. But these young guys at Gettysburg who were killed in the prime of life and had a reason to live, they weren't ready to go. It seems like they, you know, leave energy behind, and it's still there. And, but I think it eventually dissipates over long periods of time because ghost researchers go to Pompeii, and all those people died 2,000 years ago.
Not much.
They're not haunting it anymore. That energy's dissipated there by now. So
that's an interesting way to look at it. I agree, because I think there is something. I would say I do believe in ghosts. You know, just like
you never seen one.
But I've never seen one, right?
Nor have I. Right.
Right. But I like how you put it, that it's maybe, you know, if you were a kid or a young child and you saw it, maybe those senses grew over time, and now you're like a parent, you know, in, more in tune. You
it's
know?
A perception, and then that might have to do with you individually. Maybe even some children may not have that just natural sensitivity or whatever, and others do. But if you grew up in a house that had a spirit in it, and you see it, then you kind of develop a. It's like an almost a skill that you know what to look for and or something, and you'll.
Yeah,
I've had interesting people over time. You know, one was a Marine special ops guy, and he grew up in a haunted house, and he came to Boobies and said, "Yeah, you've got ghosts." You know? And he wasn't making it up. You know, he'd seen ghosts since he was a kid, and he wasn't just telling me that for the heck of it. He was telling me because he meant
sensed it. he knew. Okay, well, yeah. I'll quick share a story with you, Sam. Of no, I haven't seen a ghost, but and this is maybe a side story, but it ties in with ghosts and such. And
people are interested in ghosts, so
since we're on topic, and I don't know when it'll come again on a podcast. So I grew up on Walnut Street, just right up the road here. That's where my father lived. Mom and dad got divorced when I was young, but that's beside the point. So my dad and I were at his house on Walnut Street, and I might have been 4 or 5, I don't know, young.
Yeah.
It was young. And my dad told me this story. I didn't even remember it. But it's an older house, and I can't remember the years, but it's not nothing modern, nothing new. It was an older home, row home. Anyway, I'm downstairs, dead of night. My father hears a TV, and it's like the snowflake channel. You know, it's just making noise.
Static,
yes. So I was sitting, my dad described it, because again, I was little, you know, 4 or 5 maybe, sitting on the sofa, the TV on, static, correct, making that noise. And he said, "Austin, what are you doing, buddy?" And he said, "I wasn't looking at the TV, but up in the corner." So the steps went up like this. The TV was kind of at the bottom of the steps. You can picture it. The steps went behind the TV.
Yep.
And up in the corner, I was just staring up in the corner. And I said something along the lines of, "I see him," or I see something. So my dad, of course, being just 2 of us in the house, came down the steps. "Okay, buddy, time to go to bed. You know, enough TV. Turned it off." We went back up, you know, put me to bed and everything. But he said the hairs on his neck stood up. And it wasn't until I was older and we talked, you know, he shared that story with me. I said, "I don't even remember it." And he's like, "Well, come to find out," he knew, I didn't know, years ago, the previous homeowners, there was a set of back stairs, a back staircase, you know, in older houses.
Not even there anymore?
No, they still are. The stairs are there. You know, these older homes had them. Newer homes don't. So there's two sets of steps.
They come down into the kitchen.
Yeah, oh, correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, here, sure enough, a gentleman, he had died on those steps. So my father's like, "I don't know if you saw him. I don't know what you saw," but he's like, "You were young, you know, maybe 5, and you were just, you got up out of bed for some reason, went downstairs, put the TV on, static, and he said, you were just staring up in the corner, and you were talking to me, but you said something along the lines of, I see him, or I see it." So
that's probably what you were, yeah. Now maybe you just haven't been
some energy or something.
in the presence of that many ghosts, but
yeah,
and that age is fine for the perception. That's interesting.
I know.
I wonder, you might have seen him more than that, but just when you start processing thought differently when you get to 6, 7, 8 years old, and you probably just blanked out what was in, you might have seen that ghost more than once.
Yeah.
And him, you might have known who he was, but you just didn't really understand it. You weren't old enough to even be scared of. Did you live in that house, or you just visited your dad there?
No. We lived there. Yeah, we lived there. Yeah.
So you may have seen that ghost.
Yeah.
Several more times. It's just that time your dad got downwind of it.
Yeah.
Because he didn't see the ghost.
No, he didn't. Correct. He didn't.
And but you were little, and there's a real good chance you saw that ghost several times.
And I might even say I see an angel or something along those lines, because my dad was just like he just said that the hairs on his neck stood up, and he's like, okay, come on, buddy, let's go to bed. You know.
Well, you didn't know to be scared of it.
Right. No, I wouldn't have.
There's nothing, you know, no. If you see one again, it'd get your neck, be like, ooh.
Now I'd
but
be like, ooh.
Yeah, right. But you didn't know enough to be scared, because there's nothing threatening about it or anything.
Right.
I think you probably saw a ghost in that house and the guy. Yeah. The Marine Special Ops guy, I'll make this super quick. Okay. When he started, he grew up in a house with a little girl that was so present, and there's different levels of how active ghosts can be or how much energy there is there and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some really present hauntings that are much more able to be perceived because there's just more. I don't know how you quantify it. We don't have a measurement yet.
Right.
Maybe someday there will be, but this little girl was his buddy to the point where she was almost like a playmate to him. And that's how he got his perception. But when he was about 5 years old, he finally, you begin processing thought differently then. And he said, "Mommy, why doesn't Susie ever come to dinner? She never eats."
Yeah.
And his mother was cool, because you don't want to ever tell your kid that you're not, don't make them think they're nuts. Because, you know, if you tell your kid you didn't see what you saw, that's not good.
That's not good either.
You should just accept it, especially when they're little, and just kind of learn more. Mm-hmm. Ask them a few questions, but accept that they might have seen some, residual energy ghost person. Well, in this case, mom was cool. She probably didn't see the little girl, but she said, "Susie's not like the rest of us, honey. You know, she's different." And he accepted that, and he kept seeing her the whole time he was there. And they moved away not long after that. And as when he got to be a teenager, he got real curious, because this was so present. He remembered it well.
Wow.
He remembered, it's like, wow, it was a little girl. And when he lived at that house, he had recurring dreams that there's three dormers in the top floor of the house, and the middle dormer, he would always picture himself at that dormer, and he had falling dreams. He'd picture himself falling out of that window. Right before he'd hit the ground, he'd wake up, and this happened many times to him. When he was a teenager, he went back and looked into this house.
Yeah.
Guess what? The little girl lived there. Guess how she died? She fell out the middle dormer and fell to the ground and died.
What?
It's kind of interesting, spooky, isn't it?
That is.
Yeah.
Wow. That gets you tingling a little bit. Wow.
And this dude is real perceptive. I guess it's almost like if you get more and more and more used to it, you just kind of get more likely to perceive. And this has all come from someone that I've never seen a single ghost. And I will say, if I walk into a building like Boobies, or I walk into some place that's a really wonderful recreation, really detailed recreation, but brand new, there is a different feel.
Okay.
I can't quantify it in any way, but if I walk in an old building that's truly actually historic, that does not feel at all like a place I walk in that's brand new, even if it's Disney World and they created a haunted house and, the old Victorian, there is a different feel to it. And that's the closest I get to knowing any more about that, because it's just not the same. You can walk into Boobies and get that kind of feeling right away that this is real.
Yeah.
Old.
Yeah. Old. Right, right.
It's been the same too. It wasn't remodeled. If you remodel everything, that seems to maybe mess with it somewhat. Like if you rip out the whole inside and put a whole new inside, it's not the same.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was never done. I mean, there's some renovation. But
like you said, it's probably the senses, right? Smell, touch. Mm-hmm. You know, as you enter into an older style building or home, about it, you just...
It's a sensation of sorts. But, if you walk into Boobies, you will get the feeling right away that it's not a recreation.
Yeah, right.
It's not just
it's got some history.
Mocked up to look cool, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I can't quantify that either. It's just it's a sense. But I love historic buildings. So I've been in dozens of them, hundreds of them, and they do have a cool feel to them.
There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you're into ghost hunting, go down to Booby's Brewery.
Yeah, there's that check too. Check it out. That too.
Yeah. Let's take a sip break. I'm with you. Yep. This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a Garage Beer. It's just beer-flavored beer.
Good to stay hydrated. You had a list.
Yeah, I want to pick up with the items you brought with you today.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about them? I know you showed them a little bit earlier, but...
The reason I brought items, and I had to think about that, because a lot of my work isn't, like, I'm not an artist. We're here, look at my painting, right. You know, I mean, not like that. This is one of many, many Booby's Brewery bottles I brought along, and in the old days, they didn't put labels way back, and they started labeling in the early 1900s. But they often did this embossed glass with raised letters. And this would have been a beer bottle. They hadn't invented bottle caps yet. And so they had this wire clasp. A lot of people have seen these on jars and stuff. But that's the way they used to typically do a bottle. But it's just indicative. Mr. Booby has been a big influence on my life because what he built, I've been there far longer than him now. I mean, he died when he was 57. Yeah. I had only been there for 30 years. You know, I'm going past 42 years now. So,
yeah.
But what he built has been a big influence on my life. There's no questions. And I love to think I'm trying to be a good steward of it. And I'm looking forward to passing it over. I'd love to pass it on to people that he'll do even better than me. That's what I would love. Mm-hmm. And I would acknowledge that in a heartbeat. That's what I'm hoping for. I hope the next people are able to honor it. And continue the creative process that's gone on there over the past 50 years. But anyway, yeah, the one fun thing about bottles is we do have a few. I didn't bring one of them along that have beer in them.
No
the
way.
Beer's no good.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be any good. Beer's usually, I don't recommend waiting more than a couple of months to drink beer that you buy, because beer only has such a low alcohol content, it'll eventually go bad. Mm. Whiskey lasts for generations if you really wanted it to. Especially if you store it right, but it's got a lot more alcohol in it. Alcohol is a preservative. But what I'm interested in the bottles that have a little bit of beer in them is the remaining yeast cells that are in there could be extracted. Another one I hope is a someday project for Booby's to reconstitute some of the yeast that Mr. Booby actually would have used to make his beer. It seems to me to be possible to a good microbiologist might be able to
some help us
develop a batch and then make beer.
Wow.
Well, they've done it with scraping the goo off the inside of an ancient Mesopotamian jar. So I thought if they could do that, they can probably get it out of a little bit of beer that's only 150 years old.
Wow.
So that's what I'm hoping for there. But yeah, Mr. Booby made, he was in charge when this bottle was made. And there's that. This is because acting has been such a key part of my life. This derby that I wear a lot for different characters. I have, I don't even know how many characters I play, at least 30 different things I have in my pocket that I could pull up in a heartbeat. Just, you know, over the years, you know, I'm a storyteller. I like stories.
So what is one real quick?
Well, this is a guy named Mr. Philip Frank. I play this in one of our murder mysteries. Is the opening night of Booby's Brewery's hotel. Booby's Brewery goes back further, and the brewery actually predates Mr. Booby's. I don't want to bore you with the details there, but the brewery goes back to about 1859. Mr. Booby took it over in 1876. He built a hotel in 1879, a couple of years later, and we presume there was some sort of opening night, you know, the hotel was.
Oh, yeah.
So we bring that alive.
Oh,
and
you recreate that.
It, and it's a murder mystery.
Okay.
So you're there with the dignitaries of town, the mayor of Mountjoy's there to open the place, and the doctor in town, the doctor, lawyer, and Indian chief, they're all there, you know. And this guy, one wealthy investor, who, by the way, lived in the house across the street, that's now where the tunnel goes, and we have lodging, but we want to dig out.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy was named Philip Frank, and I play him as one of my characters in that opening night Booby's Brew show. Yeah, I don't play Mr. Booby. I'm happy to let somebody else do that, but I play Mr. Frank, a wealthy investor that helped put money into the business, which is actually true, that Mr. Frank did put money into the business.
That's so cool.
So we used a lot of truth, but made a story out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Frank would have probably worn a derby. That was a typical hat of the time. And it's fun because we made a story out of the murder mystery. But yeah, Mr. Frank's house is across the street. He made malt out of barley, which is what you make beer with. So he was a brewery supplier, and supplied breweries with barley malt, malted barley grain all over the Northeast. And here's young Mr. Booby. He was a mentor to Mr. Booby and helped him get the brewery started, and he helped finance the hotel. He actually owned the property even for a period of time before Mr. Booby did, and sold it to Mr. Booby. He was in the malting business. He was happy to let Mr. Booby run it. So anyway, so one of the characters. But I even use this for a couple others. Last night I was a mob boss, and back in the 1920s during Prohibition. Philadelphia mob boss I was playing, that was during. We have two of our shows are about during the 1920s when Booby's was a speakeasy. So we bring that to life by making a speakeasy. Yeah. But then, and all some of them are grounded. Like we have a Civil War one that's about during the Civil War when the Confederates got as far as Wrightsville.
That's right.
Before turning back to Gettysburg, and happens to be a night where it's the night before the little battle that took place over in Wrightsville, and the whole area is stirred up, and the people are at the hotel.
Yeah,
and you're one of them, you know, when you're there. So we
that's so creative, it's based in like real world events and things, you know.
Yeah, in some cases. Mad scientist one isn't, but you know.
Right, but still,
but
that's
some
so
of them,
cool.
Several of them, we've used real history in them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our one gentleman who's manager. Joey has a business of his own called Roundtable Productions. His name's Rob Earhart, and he writes the shows. And we all help have input into him, but he lays down, he does the research, we have 15 murder mysteries right now that we do.
Wow.
We don't do them all. We do them in rotation, kind of, but we might do five or six at a time that we rotate through, mm-hmm. and we do them all year long. So. As much as we do special ones at Halloween and Christmas, we do them all year. So that's this. This is just another. The only reason I brought this piece along is I just got it yesterday, and it said Mr. Booby. It's before he came to Booby's Brewery, and I just brought it along because it was in my car. But I think it's a paperweight. I think so, but we're not sure. It could also be it's not a stencil, because if you press this, it would be in reverse.
You know,
if you were reading it, so it has to be. Meant to be like this, and we don't know exactly what it is, but it's an iron. It might be brass actually, because we were looking at the corner of it. I think it's probably iron, but we think it's from Mr. Booby's time before he got to Mountjoy, but in Lancaster. He's from Miltenberg, which is a town in Bavaria, and he came to the United States when he was 18. But the other thing that really
I noticed a pine cone. Right?
Why is there a pine cone?
Why is there a pine cone in your pocket?
Well, you brought the thing. You said things that had to do with my life. I have a residual portion of a piece of land that's been in my family for generations, outside of Elizabethtown, and it's all forested. But it's where we used to grow Christmas trees, which I did refer to earlier.
Yes,
that's how I put myself through college, was raising Christmas trees. But now it's in a creative way. I'm really managing this land with the help of my girlfriend and lots of contractors to just be cool too.
Yeah.
I'm letting trees grow and there's
Mother
a little,
Nature.
Yeah. So there's a little thing, a little building that my uncle's built that we've made habitable part-time, so we can actually stay there if we want to. I really do love the environment. I love outdoors. I love the woods. And here I feel not just blessed with my business, but blessed with this thing that goes back to my great-grandfather's generation, a piece of land. Now, my cousins and uncles have several other parcels of it, but I have a 25-acre piece that's outside of E-Town. Yeah. And, boy, I have endless things I'd love to do there. And this is a seed, you know, the seeds in here.
I love that.
The seeds of creativity are right there too. Again, I not that Bibby's Brewery wouldn't be plenty, but I really do love being outside too. So the other half of my life now, as I'm hopefully entering my retirement phase, I'm 66.
It's just getting started.
Yeah, it does frustrate me because I know I don't have forever, and that's another thing. You know, you're half my age, 33.
Yeah.
I just realized that. I want to make sure I get at least the key things I want to do in my life to happen, because it's a limited resource and I have a lot I want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people my age are like, I retire, watch TV, you know, go in an RV or whatever.
It's golf.
Like,
who wants to do that?
Nothing against golfing, but
yeah.
I have so much I'd love to do. And in this land, I guess you have to find what inspires you. And I've been inspired for many years by my business, no question, because there's endless things I could still do. And the next people will not run out of things to do that are interesting and developmental there. But I don't want that to be the only thing. I have this other thing. So there's two things, and my land is the other thing.
Yeah.
And I love nature. I am very interested in the environment. I'm not an environmentalist, but I'm a realist. Mm-hmm. And you know, if we don't figure out what to do with this planet, we're not going to have it.
Right.
People say, you know, save the planet. Planet is not worried about us. It's like, save something? We got to save ourselves. Because if we trash the whole thing and ruin it, oh, well, the planet will just shrug us off like a bunch of fleas off the back of a pig,
right.
You know?
Yeah, and keep going on, right.
The planet's had ice ages and, you know, the high carbon periods and, you know, but if we keep ignoring, if we keep burning, you know, fossil fuel, it took millions of years to make it, and in 150 years we burnt through quite a large, mm-hmm. We shouldn't be burning fossil fuel. We should be using it like iron and copper to make things and then recycle those things.
Yeah.
We have to get there eventually. So this stuff concerns me because I really do care about it. But, you know, being a realist, if you do nothing but throw your garbage in your front yard, you're going to eventually drown in it, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, no, process it. You know, everything can be recycled in some level.
Reused, repurposed.
It can be compost. It can be, you know, glass gets made into glass and plastic. They're still working on that. But these poor third world countries are drowning in this stuff. But, you know, we can do all of that. Mm-hmm. It just takes some technology and some care and some interest. But, boy, just not thinking of that is not the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, if the right now they're worried about the Gulf Stream collapsing. If the Gulf Stream stops working because too much fresh water melts off of glaciers and the fresh water is a different viscosity or whatever, and the Gulf Stream starts not working, that's going to screw things really, really, really badly. And that's just one example of things that can screw up. Sea level rise, you know. I remember Googling it once. You know, what's the average elevation of Miami? It's like 5 feet.
Wow. That's not too much. Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, so that stuff concerns and I think about it a lot. But I'm trying to manage my little 25 acres to sequester some carbon. And,
there you go, right.
You know, and I still drive a gasoline vehicle. But I'm ready for, you know, hydrogen power and electric vehicles and clean energy. And, you know, I'm very interested in all that. It can be done. It's just we got to get moving or we're gonna suffer.
Yeah, sooner or later.
I'll be dead when the crap hits the fan, but, you know, I really still care about, you know, what goes on.
The future, right?
Sure,
future
absolutely.
Generations,
you have a nine-month-old.
I do, and a baby girl, a two-year-old. We have two.
A two-year-old as well.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want them growing up to a world that's been trashed.
Right, yeah, let them our dirty laundry to say, you know.
Yeah, right. The sea levels come up, people drown, and causes violence because now all of a sudden all that property is useless.
That land. Yeah.
whatever. I mean, we can live on water, I guess, but still.
Yeah. It's when you think about it. Yeah. Mother Nature. And I love that you brought the pine cone. I was just at my cousins, they have a camp and it's up Gailton up north and such. But
what Potter County.
Yeah, Potter County up that way. Correct. Yeah.
I used to ski at Denton Hill.
Oh, it's beautiful up there. You know, God's country for real. I mean, it's beautiful. Yep, leaves change. And to me, nothing beats sitting around a campfire with friends, with family, and just, you know, or just being in nature. You know, we're just up there, just sitting on the porch, wind blowing, you know, trees. Of course, it's a little
fabulous.
Cool, it is. Yeah, it really is.
It's just a good, you're connected.
And, yeah, and it gets you away from all the technology and the screens and the hustle and bustle of, I mean.
Just a walk in the woods. I forget who said, just a walk in the woods is therapeutic. I mean, it's so true. In Pennsylvania, we're blessed with.
Yeah.
They really trashed this state 100 years ago because, you know, we were lumber, coal, oil, you know, railroad, steel, you know, mining soft coal and the whole, you know, that stuff stopped, and now the forest is
regrowing. It's coming back. Mother Nature's, you know, going to do what she's going to do.
Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, Potter County's a good example. It's gorgeous up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little town of Wellsboro, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, we're right through there. Yeah. With the oil. With the little gas. Yes. Yeah.
I know what you meant. You know probably used to be.
It's my first time going through. So,
yeah.
My cousins were used to it. They're like, yeah, this is.
Yeah. Check this out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I hope you're invited back again.
Hopefully. Yeah. I had a lot of fun. It was a good weekend. So,
yeah.
Sam, let's talk about how can our listeners connect with you, but also follow along to Boobies Brewery.
Well, certainly, I must immodestly recommend a visit to Boobies, and everybody knows somebody that would like that sort of thing, and everybody knows somebody that probably hasn't been there yet. So for a little fun adventure, I mean, if you want to go full boat, you can stay overnight, you know, or if you just want to pop by as you're coming to visit, we're central between our area, Lancaster County, because Philadelphia is right down the way. Gettysburg is right over here. You know, Hershey's right over here. Mm-hmm. And there's so much around here to do. And we're right kind of in the middle of all that. I'd love to think, I like to say I get visitors from New Zealand and I get visitors who walk to my place from their house.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's something for everybody. And we do have a lot of things going on that you can. Anything from stopping in for a beer and a burger to having your wedding there, which is a little more involved, obviously.
Right.
But we there's always something interesting to see. We're not open in the daytime during the week because we're not we're very much a destination restaurant. Mountjoy is a small town, so we're not open for lunch then. But all day Saturday and all day Sunday we are, and we're very busy on Saturdays and Sundays. Through the day, but every evening, excuse me, right now we're not open on Monday evenings, but Tuesday through Sunday we're open. And boy, between events, our website and our Facebook presence we try real hard to keep that up with what's going on. But there's all this stuff coming up for Christmas. And I think people get a kick out of coming to a Christmas show just for we have a lot of people that have made that tradition to come to one of our Christmas shows during the holidays. We have a whole bunch, so they can pick from four different shows that we do during December for Christmas. But we want to bring alive, and I think it's good to get out, have a bite to eat, laugh. A complete evening to me for you, if you came to Boobies Brewery, would be. Come to one of our shows because then you kind of get the full boat. You'll get to see the place, so you'll get a meal, you'll have some fun, you'll learn something ideally because there's stuff to learn, and you'll see you'll experience a very unique historic property. So it's a kind of a lot going on in one visit if you want to allow that or an interest in that sort of thing. So there's a lot to do and see there, but we sell tickets to our shows or online, or you can call us. And I like when people call in and ask questions. We're there to answer the phone. We try to live answer the phone a lot.
Oh, that's great.
Some people are afraid to call these days, so we try to make it possible. But I like people to call us. Just call. You know, we're there. And there's so much going on. You might have a question, and we'll answer it. Hey, you don't have to go through 30. Right. Punch your phone 20 times before you get
anybody.
Punch
this number and that number.
We usually try to just answer it.
Yeah, it's a little easier, right?
Old-fashioned one style. Yeah. If we don't get to the phone in time or there's three calls lined up, it will go over to voicemail. But, we do still try to get back to people on a timely basis. So, we get it. But, I get frustrated by when you're just trying to do some simple little thing and you
just want an answer.
Option three and then you hit that and it backs
option
you up.
Option four or five. It's like, holy cow. And that's it. You forget why you called in the first place after a while.
It's 3 minutes in, you're like, what?
why am I doing this?
And then you could be on hold for half an hour. You know, we try to avoid that for the customer. I want it to be experience based. Like, we want your experience to be what we're thinking about at our end.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm a show guy. I'm a theater guy. I want, if somebody comes to a show, they're supposed to, you know, you want the show to go well and give you an experience that's meaningful and fun, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And I want that to be what I like that our place has kind of a theatrical presence. Of course, over the years, the people I've hired, a lot of them are theater people and theater related people and Renaissance Fair people, you know, that kind of stuff.
They because probably they love it.
Well, it's a natural for, you know, it's a good fit for them. And a real variety, you know. We're very inclusive, mm-hmm. and that's important to me too. You know, I like being. I think a lot of different seeds is better than just one. Mm-hmm. You know, do you eat the same one kind of bread all the time? Well, if you do, then fine. There's plenty of options for you. But if you like all kinds of bread,
mix it up. Yeah, garlic, wheat, rye. You know, I get what you're saying. Pumpernickel, exactly. So for your bottom dollar, Boobies Brewery offers so much, you know, and mm-hmm. I feel like now, especially, everyone's looking to save money, but this is
an opportunity. They want to go out.
Yeah, they want to go out, but this is an opportunity where you're not just getting a meal and, you know, here, pay us for the food. This is an experience. This is something you take your friends mm-hmm. to, you know, go out and for, you know, the most bang for your buck, let's mm-hmm. even say. No, I love it. And you're such a showman yourself, Sam, you know, in the best way possible.
I hope so. I want to be. Yeah. You know, no, that's purposeful because I am paying attention to how all that works too. But if you don't have a lot of money, just, you know, stop by and sit at our little pub and get a drink.
Get a beer or two.
If you like an IPA or something, you know.
Perfect. Exactly.
A good lager, you know, just sit there and have a beer.
Amen to that.
And you get to see it and check out the beer garden. Yeah. You can go out in our outdoor beer garden and we have giant chess and cornhole and, you know, a bunch of games. You know.
Tour the catacombs and do it all.
Yeah, we decided we're keeping our beer garden open all winter and letting people play games. Because you go out there and play a game. When you get chilly, you come back in, warm up, get a beer.
Get a beer to warm you up. I love that. So, Sam, before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
Life is short. Get out there and have a little bit of fun. Nobody's going to put up a monument to you if all you did was suffer and be miserable. A lot of times work is work, and maybe I like what Thomas Edison said. He said, it must be great being an inventor. You know, he said, my inventions, sir, are 91% inspiration, which is truly the fun part. Don't take it away from me.
Yeah.
But they're 99% perspiration.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, sure, it's fun, but that's if, you know, you better be good enough with 1 or 2%. But you know, that's life. That's fine. But don't take away that.
Right.
That's important.
1%. Yeah.
Keep that 1% because that makes all the rest of it worthwhile. I guess that's my closing statement.
Perfect. Samuel Allen, owner of Boobies Brewery, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop, veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.